The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
You'll be hearing me do a bunch of shows from this side of the world. We want to really bring you a perspective on what's happening outside America, outside Europe, and from other parts of the world. And, of course, this episode is on Christmas Eve. We really want to wish all of our Breaking Banks listeners a very happy Christmas and happy holiday period, and make sure that you have a great break. It's going to be a huge year next year, but of course it's already been a big year this year in 2015, and there's some things that have popped up in the news that have caught my eye. I'm sure there's been some things that you've heard about. The first thing I noticed this week was some news from Africa. We've seen Barclays Africa open its Rise Innovation Hub in Cape Town in a venue called the Bandwidth Barn, providing startups with a physical location to facilitate their fintech innovation ideas. They've opened the hub in Cape Town. It's the latest expansion that Barclays have made on their global Rise network, which includes London, Manchester, and New York. And so we wish Ashley Veazey, our good friend, who's the Barclays Africa Chief Innovation and Digital Officer, all the very best there. I think he's on the verge of a fantastic market and a very exciting time to be in Africa. Second thing I saw was Swift was announcing a possible implementation of the blockchain in its correspondent banking services. They are moving fast to really understand and to adopt this technology from what we read. And they're even stating that potentially in early 2016 they'll have some impacts or some outcomes from that activity. So we wish our friends at Swift well as well. Another item, I think, just to switch gears a little bit, was around the investment into fintech startups across 2015. Of particular interest was in Q3 of 2015. There was $4.8 billion invested in equity funding into fintech startups, probably the biggest investment they've made over the past. And a really big note for us here in this side of the world is that Asia has seen almost $3.5 billion in funding this year so far across over 100 deals. So it just shows that this part of the world is really bubbling along very nicely. It's growing. I think that the funding follows the great ideas and also the market opportunities. So that's been really big news. Of course, we are keeping our eyes on Australia and New Zealand as two terrific markets. And we're very lucky today to transition to our first guests to talk to Jessica and Jost from Tyro Payments. Jessica, are you there?
I am. Hi, Rob.
Thank you for joining us today. Do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So my name's Jessica Alerm and I'm a partner development manager here at Tyro Payments. We're a long-standing fintech startup in Australia. We didn't make it onto the top 50 emerging fintech startups or top 100 thanks to KPMG because apparently we're too old now. But I'm here with the CEO, Jost Stollmann. So Jost, perhaps you can give a little bit more background on Tyro.
Okay, fine. So Jost Stollmann, German, struggling with English. Our warmest regards from down under to the Break Bankers. We are very sympathetic with that, with great these words.
Very good. Yeah, so Jess, tell us a bit about, so you've done, just to touch on your own recent writing and content recently, you've recently done what is termed a FinTech Founders Series. Can you tell us a bit about what that series is and what have been some of the highlights that you've come across?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very lucky, I suppose, to be working in the fintech space and get a flavour of what's happening. Tyro is definitely a bit of an epicentre for that. But of course, we're reaching out into the community and we have our hub now and we're making a lot of connections into the fintech space here in Sydney and even wider down to Melbourne and Tasmania. So I suppose one of the opportunities with fintech is that everyone's very willing to help out each other. And there's a lot that we can all learn from each other, especially some of these people that are making the brave move to leave the corporate world behind and start their own business. So I thought it would be really interesting to tell the human side of the fintech startup scene. You know, we hear a lot about the technology, but actually what's really interesting sometimes is the human angle and what we can learn from other people's journeys and stories. So I was very fortunate to be able to start that journey with Jos Stolman, so CEO of Tyro. He was the first in my Fintech Founders series. And the second person that I interviewed, very interesting, was Mitch Herridge. Now, he's the CMO over at Society One, who are a peer-to-peer lender here in Australia that are going guns blazing. And he was actually ex-lending club over in the States. It was great to get his perspective on what disruption was possible in the Australian market and definitely to understand the flavour of how much there is going on in the States and how much opportunity he can see coming to our shores. So that was definitely a really interesting interview. And then continuing with the international theme, the next up was Dermot Crean. He was down in Tasmania. He's actually British by birth, but he started an invoice financing business down there, InvoiceX. And then finally, a bit of homegrown talent, Chris Breike, who's the founder of robo-advice company StockSpot.
Terrific. Wow, it's a good cross-section there. It'd be interesting to hear if the gentlemen, the people who've had some experience in different markets, have any notes, Jost, obviously yourself and the other guests you've had on that series, if they've got any comparison between life in Australia and Sydney versus other markets as a fintech organisation. Jost, have you got any thoughts on comparisons between life in Sydney as a fintech startup versus elsewhere?
Come to Sydney. I mean, it's just awesome. Life is wonderful. I'm selling my laser. We are laid back and we are at the same time reinventing banking. There is no better place than Sydney. So there's also no better time. I mean, if I can make three observations here. One observation is that banking is ripe for disruption. Australia is fabulous because it has four big retail banks. There's $40 billion yearly net profit, and it's just staring at entrepreneurs and come here and, what is it, you break banks. Yeah, break banks. Here are four to be broken. So that's my first observation. The second observation is that here with Aussie Tech Talent, we have actually launched the first next-gen bank platform. Don't need to be a Nobel Prize winner to think that it has to be cloud-based. It has to be totally mobile, and we are in the small, medium enterprise and fast growth company space where it needs to be seamlessly integrated so you can take out all the frictions of banking. And guess what? While we are hiding here in Australia and getting on with our life, we just raised $100 million. The lead investor is Tiger Global in New York. They are famous for having invested early into companies like Facebook, Apple, or LinkedIn. And for some reason, they have convinced themselves that little Tyro in beautiful Sydney is the bet on the front runner in next-gen banking. We had then Mike Cannon-Brookes, who just came to fame with his IPO, investing into the company and a local institution. So it's actually Sydney rocks.
Indeed, I think it is a great time to be there. And as we've known from recent press, there's been a lot of action and activity from the government, Jess, supporting innovation in every industry, to be honest, but even in fintech in particular. Have you got any sort of summary that we could share with the Breaking Banks audience on the government movement in innovation support?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Look, I don't have specific figures, but I I'd just say we're very lucky, I suppose, to have someone like Malcolm Turnbull spearheading these sorts of initiatives. And he was just down at Stone and Chalk, one of the other hubs, about a week ago, really pushing that innovation initiative forward. So we can only say this is a start, I suppose, of many other Tyros. And I think that's definitely our vision. You know, we don't want to be the only one. We want there to be many disruptors out there who are challenging the banks and providing a better deal ultimately for consumers and businesses.
Go ahead, please. Well, one of the ideas why we launched what we call the Tyro FinTech Hub, the first FinTech Hub in Australia, was the thinking that while we have 250 people here, we are growing at 75%, and we're doing lots of stuff, there is so much opportunity in the banking and financial services space that in order to have a real go at disrupting and competing successfully with the bank oligopoly and bringing all these cool new solutions to the consumer and to the business community, we need a whole ecosystem. And one of the big problems that the ecosystem has, yes, they need a nice place to collaborate, meet, exchange ideas and all this. But another one is to find like-minded people who provide a platform that gives them access to the otherwise well-guarded and fenced-off core banking system. So that idea, you could also label it API Bank, where we develop with new fintech startups APIs to provide them access, and seamless new banking solution is a way to leverage our own efforts dramatically. So we are very bullish on this approach.
That's great, Jost. And tell me what it was like dealing with the government or the regulator and getting a banking license. Was that something that was a challenge? And is it common for these licenses to be given out?
Well, Tyro is in this specific situation that we are actually a brainchild of the Reserve Bank, who was craving for more innovation and competitive tension. So we have always seen ourselves actually as a partner of the regulator. And because we are greenfield, we architect our systems to prudential and regulatory standards. The regulator and the Reserve Bank was also the one who forced access for us. And it's major for us to believe that banks cannot wipe us out. Our problem is actually the oligopoly. It's major banks who are very keen on stifling competition, on bundling and on cross-subsidizing and whatever they say in romantic pitches around fintech. They are the real competitors for us. And if you ask me, for most of the fintech suppliers, I mean, the real disruptive one, you have lots of fintech plays where you sustain banks or you give them technology or you front end them. But the ones who will make all the difference are the ones who attack them front end and break banks.
Okay, well, it's exciting time, and it's terrific that the government has recognized the opportunity, I think. And look, we wish you all the very best in the coming 2016 period. We'd love to check back in with you and see how you're progressing. So, Jess and Jost, I want to thank you very much indeed for being on the show today. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Bye.
Great. A quick thank you now to our sponsors from Temenos. Temenos core banking customers have a 42% higher return on capital than banks using legacy systems. And so head to Temenos.com to see the different case studies about Temenos and what they're doing to help banks transform. We're going to be right back after this message and with more Breaking Banks. Stay tuned.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
What do you want your world to look like in 2030? This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we're joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. It's Rob Finlay here from Next Bank, host of the Breaking Banks series from this side of the world. We look forward to lots more conversations, shows, content from Asia, Australia, and the general other side of the world. We've just finished talking to Jost Stolman and Jessica Ellem from Australia. They're part of Tyro Payments and have a great business and great opportunity down there, and really represent some of the great fintech stories that are coming out of Sydney in particular, and obviously the country more broadly. We're going to jump now to Hong Kong and really the exciting things that are happening in Hong Kong around fintech this year and next year. We've got two guests from Hong Kong. First, we're going to talk to Janos from FinTech Hong Kong. Janos, are you there?
Yes, I am, Rob.
Great to talk to you today, Janos, and obviously a very exciting time for Hong Kong on a range of levels. Tell me a bit about FinTech Hong Kong first. It's not just a general term. It's a business you've started. Tell us a bit about that, and why did you decide to start FinTech Hong Kong?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Rob, for having me on the show. Essentially, FinTech Hong Kong was created in July 2014. Initially, it was a simple Twitter account. And then we start producing the first fintech report for the Hong Kong government, which was eventually viewed over 20,000 times. What we looked in that report was really what made Hong Kong a powerful fintech hub, given its financial and human capital, as well as its proximity to China. James, actually, which is also on the show, was one of the very first person interviewed. The reason why FinTech HK was started was back in July 2014, I used to work in London, and sort of the rationale behind London and New York being fintech hubs was they were financial centers, they had a lot of money, and they had a lot of talent within finance. And Hong Kong possessed all of those three elements. So therefore, it was very natural for Hong Kong to become a fintech hub. And the idea that FinTech HK was here to catalyze the growth of that ecosystem. So this is why FinTech HK was created.
And how well-positioned were you personally to take this content lead, I suppose, for Hong Kong? Is it something you've always had an interest in?
There's different things. I mean, all of my postgraduate education, whether my master's or my PhD, was actually done in Hong Kong. And my understanding of the fintech market in China has been there already in 2010 when I worked on peer-to-peer lending and shadow banking in China. The other part is I was about to go anyway in Hong Kong to work. So this wouldn't have changed much. The other one is my background being regulatory. And as we all know, fintech is within the financial services industry, a highly regulated industry, and you cannot grow an ecosystem without having the adequate regulatory framework. So at the same time of creating FinTech HK, I also applied for a scholarship to do a PhD at Hong Kong Law School on regulatory matters for fintech. So both are complementary, and this is why I decided to do that.
So you mentioned how you originally were a Twitter account, which is funny how a lot of businesses and brands can start from social media these days. And then obviously you worked on some reports for the government. What kind of other services do you find yourself doing now, and what's the market really looking for?
Currently, Fintech HK is really an online service provider in the sense that we provide content and we develop human capital. So whether it's in the form of reports, video, or supporting the organization of large-scale events like the Fintech Finals in January next year, those are the type of thing of educating people and growing that human capital, and that really was the focus for 2015. Going forward in 2016, it's how do we make offline content for people in the community? How do we introduce entrepreneurs with the investors? How do you introduce the regulatory consideration to the startup community? And that's going to be the work we're going to be doing next year.
You touched on before the work you've done for the government. How would you summarize the government's approach to fintech right now in Hong Kong? And is there a slight contrast? Obviously, this week I think you've been in a couple of different countries. Have you got any pointers on the unique stance that the Hong Kong government has about fintech?
Yeah, I think you can compare the Hong Kong government activity within Asia. And like you said, I was in Australia 3 days ago and I saw what was happening in Singapore. I think Hong Kong's government involvement was really established in February 2015 when they made the budget speech saying that fintech is a strategic focus for the government going forward. Now, with that said, this was the main announcement so far in to date, and I guess the next big announcement will be next year, next January, for the new budget speech. In between, the government was not so keen on doing public displays of interest, but this doesn't mean that the work hasn't been happening in the background. Now, if I compare this, for example, to Singapore, where you have more regular announcements of the government activity within the fintech space, or Australia, it's a different approach, and I think it's more of a market-led approach. So the government is not here to proactively make noise and echo on the public sphere about its involvement in fintech, but yet the background work and actually the actual work for the system, especially from the regulatory perspective, is still happening in the background. So it's less public, but it's, I guess, as effective as we see with the growth of the system there.
Just some top-line numbers, if you have them to hand, Giannis, I'm putting you on the spot here, but approximately how many fintech startups do you think are based in Hong Kong, and how many banks are there?
So you have 70 of the world's 100 largest banks in Hong Kong. This doesn't mean that all these banks actually operate in Hong Kong. They tend to have their control and management function, so that's on the banking side. On the startup side, it's really a question of definition, but I think it's fair to assume that Hong Kong has anything from 90 to 110 startups. Looking back at the last 1 to 2 months, I think the growth of the Hong Kong startups in the fintech space has been about 20%. Not so much anymore on the peer-to-peer side, but more companies on the payment side as well as wealth management and artificial intelligence. So definitely you start to see more of a maturity of the ecosystem as well as the type of players entering the space.
Are the banks there that are based in Hong Kong, are they genuine controlling centers, or are they essentially in Asia based for an international bank, or is it a combination of all of those types of presences?
Can you repeat that question?
Yeah, are the banks that are based in Hong Kong, are they headquartered there, or are they simply a base for an American or a European bank to distribute their own services, mm-hmm. or is it a combination of both?
No, it's definitely a combination of both. And this was said, out of the top 70 banks, not all of them are actually deploying their services within Hong Kong and actually even within the region. It's just that Hong Kong, geographically and from a tax and regulatory perspective, has a lot of benefits to be headquartered there. And now, whether you have actually business operation within Hong Kong and the region, that's for the bank to decide. And, typically, a Citibank will not have as much of a retail presence than what a Standard Chartered or DBS would have, for example, or an HSBC, actually.
Okay. I'm going to bring in James Lloyd now from AMP Credit Technologies. We're going to introduce him, and then in the second part of the show after the break, we'll talk a lot more detail. But James, are you there? Tell us a bit about who you are and what AMP Credit Technologies is.
Hi, Rob. Good to hear from you. Thank you for having me on. AMP Credit Technologies, we're a Hong Kong-headquartered fintech company with a presence here in the city, Singapore, Philippines, and most recently the UK. And we're really all about enabling banks to lend to those small businesses that they wouldn't otherwise lend to. So effectively, we're an alternative lending platform provider for incumbent financial services. institution. So yeah, we're very much focused on empowering banks as opposed to disintermediating them.
And obviously, potentially the audience can tell from your accent, you're not from Hong Kong. But is your business a Hong Kong fintech startup? As Janos is listed, is it born out of Hong Kong or has it come from somewhere else?
Well, I'd be interested to hear from your audience where they think my accent is from, because I get a UN level of country scope in terms of where I may or may not be from. No, I'm Irish, Dublin originally. Actually, part of a team that built up an e-commerce payment gateway out of Dublin, which was subsequently sold to Global Payments, and kind of taking that payments knowledge, which the management team here have in AMP, which is a Hong Kong-based and headquartered company. So, you know, I've been here 3.5 years. We've been building the company, proving out the platform, utilizing our own capital. And really, we've progressed now to facilitating banks. So enabling banks to leverage their competitive advantages, cost of capital, distribution, data, so on and so forth, and really enabling them to service their own customers in an efficient manner. So very much a Hong Kong company, but, you know, we are also, as I mentioned, present, you know, regionally. We've got an operation in Singapore. We've one in the Philippines, and we're quite keen on developing markets as well. And most recent expansion into the UK, where we see plenty of scope for this type of product.
Janos mentioned just before about the number of banks that are based in Hong Kong. Have you found them to be accessible, open-minded? Are you seeing the transition of the industry to being open to involving themselves with startups?
It's a great question, and I'll try to be measured in my response. I mean, I think what's interesting about Hong Kong is there's no real financial service native champions here in the way that you might have in other markets. So, yes, we have a large concentration of financial services firms, whether they be retail banks, investment banks, insurance companies, and so on and so forth. But actually, really, they're all ultimately managed and directed from, you know, whether it be the mainland, the UK, Europe, the US, and so on. In fact, Hong Kong's biggest financial services, native financial services firm is AIA, the insurance company. Itself an offshoot of AIG from the 2008-2009 crisis. So I think that has a bit of a knock-on effect insofar as where in Singapore we found, you know, a couple of the banks to be perhaps more receptive to working with startups, working with growth stage fintech companies, because I think Singapore is probably more of a joined-up approach in that sense. I mean, fintech is obviously clearly a pillar industry that the Singaporean government is trying to create, and as a consequence, you see a knock-on effect from the Sovereign Wealth Fund and Temasek and some of the large banks such as DBS and so on. So, you know, I think Hong Kong has perhaps a little way to go to get to that kind of joined-up approach, and the various players involved being government, regulators, and of course the financial service incumbents themselves. I think Hong Kong can get there, but I do think at this stage it's perhaps a little bit behind, and maybe that is a consequence of there being no national champions per se.
Janos, are there gaps that you see in the makeup of the fintech startups themselves? You know, are there too many of one kind and not enough of another, and is that being fostered or looked into?
I think there's a coordination piece that Hong Kong do need, and in a way, it's what you would expect from a large trade body to do. And I think that this would bring a lot of value, for example, whether for the startups, whether for the investors, whether for events, and also for the government itself, whether it's regulators on the security side and banking side. So I think the coordinating element is perhaps what is missing from Hong Kong, because I think the private sector dynamism in the space is already there, but now it's about how do you, you know, accelerate that effort that everyone is doing individually. And how do you put that in a collaborative effort? So I think this is what's really missing. On the startup side, like I said, you're starting to see the shift away from peer-to-peer lending now, and it goes more into the payment space, but importantly on the wealth management side, on the artificial intelligence, on the B2B side. So this is good because this is maturing definitely.
Is Hong Kong doing a good job at attracting the right type of entrepreneurs to the country? Are they doing a good job at helping them get set up? What's it like for someone who's starting a business in Hong Kong?
I think on the attracting the right type of entrepreneurs, you do have more and more international entrepreneurs coming over. So from an international pool of talent perspective, you do have these guys coming over and setting a shop in Hong Kong and doing stuff. From a local startup perspective, I think what's very interesting in the Hong Kong context is a lot of the university actually having dedicated fintech course to grow the human talent at the same time as you grow the fintech startup ecosystem so that they can always hire the right type of graduates. And I think that's a fascinating part. Is it always the right type of talent? I think there is still talent which is missing. You know, technology, fintech is a very technology-driven sector. I don't know to what extent engineers are actually produced to be agile as opposed to, you know, code back in languages which date back from the 60s and 70s. So perhaps this is missing, and I'm sure that James has a better knowledge on that. I think on the regulatory side, and you know, how fintech is very legally driven. Definitely the law schools within Hong Kong are starting to produce the right type of talent to join the fintech companies and sort of like educate them as to what they should watch out for in terms of compliance.
That's great. Look, we'll take a break here. James, when we come back, we're going to ask you a little bit about what life has been like as a startup in Hong Kong and a bunch of other topics. We're going to talk about China, talk about regulation, wealth management. But we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. This is Rob Finlay from Singapore talking to Janos and James in Hong Kong, and we'll be right back with Breaking Banks.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Hey all, this is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This is Rob Finlay from Next Bank. We're talking about fintech in Hong Kong. We've spoken at the start of the show to Yost and Jess from Tyro Payments down in Sydney, talking a bit about their exciting news of their funding as well as life in Sydney as a startup. But now we're talking to Janos from FinTech Hong Kong and James from AMP Credit Technologies about life in Hong Kong. James, before the break, we heard Janos talk a bit about how Hong Kong is attracting the right people to Hong Kong. Was this an experience you had as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the conditions, whether it be in London, New York, the Bali, Hong Kong, Singapore, Sydney, I think you're always going to hear people talk about talent as an issue. I think you're always going to hear people talk about regulatory regimes as an issue and so on. I mean, I think at a micro level, yes, there are improvements that can be made. But for me, I think if you're looking to build a fintech hub, as many of these places are, I think it's really going to be a demonstration effect. What we need are winners. We need guys to go out to build companies, to trade sale, to take them public, to demonstrate that this is actually a pretty viable way of you know, making a living and doing well. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, from a government perspective, from a regulatory perspective, from a VC perspective, yes, we need certain facilitators, but ultimately we just need a few winners. And I think, you know, from an Asia perspective, ex-China, we're pretty early along in that journey. So whether it be Singapore, Sydney, you know, with Atlassian has had a couple of big tech plays, but Singapore and Hong Kong are probably a little further back in that journey. For me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I think what's interesting is obviously when you talk Hong Kong, you talk China. And I think China is the real driving force in a lot of fintech right now. If you look at the US, UK, or frankly, you know, globally, fintech is still, for the most part, kind of nibbling around the edges, trying to get a sense of, you know, even the biggest, whether it be the biggest peer-to-peer guys or whatever else, they're still a fraction of a fraction when it comes to the overall market opportunity. So they are looking to attack the profit pools of existing incumbents and, you know, trying to take on individual products and services. Now look at mainland China, and fintech is a thing. Fintech is a dominant force in many ways. I mean, on, you know, payments and lending are the two current, you know, driving forces of financial technology. Well, then look at Alibaba, Alipay in China, whereby, you know, on the most recent singles day, they're doing 89,000 transactions per second at a height, something which Visa, MasterCard can't do combined. So, you know, I think suddenly we're faced on mainland China with fintech is a dominant force. Alibaba themselves, of course, set up the third biggest money market fund off the back of that, and they're accelerating into other financial services. And that's before we get into Tencent and WeChat and WePay and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think Asia really is the driving force in financial technology now. As much as we talk about London, as much as we talk about New York, actually, it's really, in many ways, the innovation is being driven from mainland China. So I think the knock-on effect in markets such as Hong Kong and Singapore is going to be fascinating.
No, I agree. Janos, you know, I think one of the typical classifications of Hong Kong is it's a gateway to China. Is that still the case? I mean, is it not easy enough now to just go to China directly if you wanted to do business? And is it a logical thing to do that? Is Hong Kong still that entry point into mainland China?
I think the narrative where Hong Kong is a gateway into China is always challenged more and more, even as a financial center. And for fintech companies, that's still the same. However, Hong Kong still do provide a level of certainty and sort of like comfort to certain companies trying to scale east. Same thing for Chinese companies. Actually, a lot of Chinese companies, when they scale out of China, they always use Hong Kong as their international headquarters before, or they're very likely to do so. So Hong Kong still has a role to play. Now, the risk that Hong Kong really faces is having one example of a successful Chinese company that has bypassed Hong Kong to grow internationally and vice versa. So one example of a EU-US company scaling into China without by bypassing Hong Kong as its main gateway. So that's what Hong Kong needs to be wary of, is that in theory it's possible, and companies can go straight into China, or they can go in Singapore and then into China. The question is, in practice, who actually has been able to do it successfully? And as soon as that story goes out publicly, then Hong Kong will really be challenged.
Is China a market that the big banks want to try and take on directly? Obviously, they see the numbers and get seduced by the scale, but quite often the domestic players there are quite strong.
I think on the China side, what it was interesting talking to very large, you know, U.S. international banks. Their competition is not Bank of China, is not like the Agricultural Bank of China. Their competition is more going to be like WeBank, MyBank, those type of banks which take niches and take niches very well. Because the truth is, in a sovereign market like China, where state-owned banks still own the vast majority of the banking space and the retail relationship, and actually even sort of the majority of the funding relationship, as an international bank, you will always have red tapes all around you. And therefore, you'll only be allowed to operate in niche play, and that niche play has already been taken by the internet giant, the BATs. So I think for the big international banks, yes, China, and for actually any international company, China is a huge market opportunity. However, your capacity and your right to tap into the Chinese market without limitation in practice is very limited.
Absolutely. James, is Hong Kong the right base then to also try and tackle Southeast Asia? Obviously, you mentioned Singapore before, but very large markets like Vietnam, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, have you or your peers in the startup world made much traction from Hong Kong? Are they markets that you can understand from Hong Kong, or do you need to really have a different perspective?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I mean, you mentioned Hong Kong as a gateway to China, and I think, you know, there are certain things such as the renminbi and internationalization and so on, which I think Hong Kong is going to continue to be extremely strong in some regards. And then in other regards, you know, perhaps depending on the type of proposition you have, perhaps you are better basing yourself in Shanghai in order to roll out. Although, you know, as is often the advice, you would need a strong local partner. As Janos rightly pointed out, it's not an easy proposition. But similarly, I think Singapore is the gateway to Southeast Asia. I think it's hard to see how that won't lessen an impact over time. Simply by virtue of the fact that if you want to establish a presence in the Philippines, are you better off having a team on the ground in Makati City in Metro Manila or wherever it might be? So you know, from that perspective, I think you know both Hong Kong and Singapore are challenged in some regard, but at the same time, both have a strong history of reinvention and kind of trying to stay ahead of the curve in terms of what's the next thing. And in many ways, the next thing is financial technology. And if you're building a financial technology proposition, whether to disintermediate the incumbents or whether to enable and service the incumbents, you know, if you're building that in Hong Kong or Singapore, you're not building it for these home markets anyway. You're thinking international from the outset. International is regional. You can go to China, and probably you're better focused exclusively on China if that's the proposition, or you can go to some of the developing markets. You know, we mentioned the Philippines, but of course Malaysia, Indonesia, and so on and so forth. Now, I'm personally fairly agnostic as to whether you do that from Singapore or Hong Kong. I don't believe that Singapore has an inalienable right to be the gateway to Southeast Asia. I think both markets, you know, we have a presence in Singapore. Obviously, we think it's a fantastic market for a lot of reasons, but both markets have their pros and cons. I think if you're going international from the outset, it's not as important where you base yourself. I think it's finding the right team, you know, finding the right supports.
Janos, just to flip onto the other side, we talked a bit about banks, about startups. What about VC and investment? Is there a favorable landscape for VC money to come to Hong Kong and base itself there? Is there a thriving VC scene? Is there smart money coming into Hong Kong itself?
On the VC side, I think in the last 1 year, you definitely have two new funds which have established themselves in Hong Kong on the VC, on the fintech side. And for next year going forward, there's a new fund coming over with 80 million US just for Asia, which is going to be deployed across, but from Hong Kong. So the VC money is coming over. I think James is better placed on saying where is the funding gap and where is the pain point. There's just one thing which I want to jump on James' comment about the capacity of reinventing itself. I'm currently in London and for an FCA consultation on RegTech and regulatory sandbox.
About regulation in a moment, but thoughts on the VC and investment side and what your experience or your peers have gone through?
You know, people do talk about the Series A gap in Hong Kong, and we ourselves, we raised about 10 million US Series A, and we needed to go international, Europe and US to do so. So people talk about the Series A gap. I'm conflicted in the sense that, you know, money is sufficiently mobile these days that I think if you've got a good proposition, you've got a good team, that you can probably raise internationally. I don't really specifically see a need to raise in your home market, particularly in a market like Hong Kong, as I mentioned, you're going to be going international anyway. But, you know, there's no doubt that Hong Kong has a huge swathe of angel investors and you know, seed money is readily available. And I suspect if you're doing, you know, the high ticket, you know, property or other deals, there's plenty of capital available there as well.
Okay, James, last question for you then is what will Hong Kong really excel at? What can it be good at in this fintech future ahead of us?
Well, it's a great question because I think each market needs to look at its individual strengths, from a historical, cultural perspective and so on, and where it's going to be placed in this fintech future. From my perspective, Hong Kong, trade finance has to be a huge element of that. Cross-border payments, remittances, again, there are things I'm getting pretty excited about right now. It was really interesting hearing from Tyro Payments in Australia earlier. They've got their digital banking or their banking license, and I'd like to see some digital banking, some digital banks perhaps in the year. We've seen obviously China, we've seen a couple of licenses in Korea, but that's another area that I think we can look to Europe, we can look to the UK, and kind of really perhaps learn from some of those examples. But look, from a Hong Kong perspective, trade finance, cross-border payments, remittances, I think that's the really exciting stuff right now.
Great. I want to thank our guests today. Thank you very much, James, for that. I want to thank our guests today, Jessica Ellum and Jost Stolman from Tyro Payments. I want to thank Janos from FinTech Hong Kong. I want to thank James Lloyd, of course, from AMP Credit Technologies. And also thanks to our sponsors, Temenos. We want to really thank them for their support. Learn more about Temenos at temenos.com. Brett will return next week with a special New Year's Eve episode of Breaking Banks. But before that, we want to end the show. Rachel, our producer, wants us to recommend another podcast. You want to check out the Big Podcast with host John Best. John is looking at how technology is shifting customer behavior and doing interviews with a lot of leaders in the fintech space. So check it out on iTunes, the BIG, the Big Podcast. Have a look at that. You'll hear from Brett next week on New Year's Eve. We'll have Credit Karma and David Bach of the Latte Factor fame. And all of our hosts and our producers wish you all a very happy holiday and a wonderful new year. We'll speak to you next time on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time for more of the latest in fintech news.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.